okay, per district.
Per district. Is that American, 15,000?
U.S. dollars,
yeah. Okay.
Okay. Now, if they could use an existing building, that's what we wanted. And so we had Colonel Wynn Van Fuck.
Okay.
N-G-U-Y-E-N-V-A-N-P-H-U-O-C. Wynn Van Fuck, who was the deputy to General Tang. Okay? And my deputy, Andy Rogers, and they were placed in charge of implementing this. So the two of them just flew around every single district, took a look at the buildings that were in existence and so forth, and immediately, with no time at all, the Delta was almost transformed. We had these Deoxys.
Yep.
Okay, going. Now, some of them were pretty poor, and it depended upon which guy they put in charge of what. You know, if they had a good...
Vietnamese or American guy?
Vietnamese and American to some degree, but okay. We had to get the Americans trained in a hurry, you know, for this, too. But yeah. The Americans were more readily available than Vietnamese.
Okay.
Who were experienced. It depended on whether or not the guy was, like, if it was a district S2, was in charge. If he was the best man mm-hmm. in the field, knew how to follow the intelligence cycle, say,
mm-hmm.
Then, and how to get people to work together, then he'd be the guy. But if it was the chief of special branch, he'd be put in charge. It might be the police chief himself, or it might be even the district chief would take over, depending on what the situation was in each one of the different districts.
And for each one of these guys, there's an American counterpart. Who would then run the American side?
At the district level, not immediately, no. At the province level, yeah, we would get able to get okay. Americans out right away, and then they were supposed to follow through in the districts.
And did
but
you have...
It would depend upon the sergeant.
Okay.
It might be a sergeant, American sergeant assigned mm-hmm. to the district advisory staff. It might be a captain or a lieutenant or
okay.
American who would be assigned to it. It might be almost anybody.
Okay.
Who was available.
Now, would he be the Phoenix person?
Well...
Is it synonymous, the Dyock with Phoenix?
No.
Okay.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
See the Phoenix program had two purposes. The first mm-hmm. and most important purpose, and the one that got General Windick Tang behind it, mm-hmm. he wasn't interested in the attack on the infrastructure, General Tang. He said, that's something else. He says, what I want are these Dyocks to get tactical military intelligence
okay.
so that the police and everybody who is gathering intelligence can get good intelligence, and when we go after the enemy, we know where to find him and what strength he's going to be in and what his deployment is going to be like and that sort of thing.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
So that's, it's again, in your region now, the Dyock then becomes the implement for Tang, not for
General Tang,
Phoenix.
Yeah, right. Supposed to be. Now,
okay.
Frequently, in practice, this didn't always work that way. In that,
okay.
Here you've got, in that particular district, you got a province, 16 provinces, okay?
Yeah.
And each one of them has 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 districts, maybe. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Arvin 21st Division would cover maybe 4 or 5 provinces, all right?
Okay.
And it might be in any one of different districts in one of those. It might not be in any. If it was in any one of them, it might have just a, say, suppose it's got a battalion. Okay, now the battalion S2
mm-hmm.
should be dealing directly with the Dyock.
Okay.
Okay? But sometimes the battalion S2s wouldn't trust the Dyocks. You know, they wouldn't consider the information worth much, or they regard it only as a lead to be followed up by their own sources and so forth. And,
mm-hmm.
It all depended upon the Americans and the Vietnamese, the people who were at the province level and the district level who were able to make this thing work.
Okay.
And on their ability.
All right. Did you have all your PIOCs in place before the DIOCs?
No, we started them almost about the same time. Yeah, the PIOCs were started a little bit earlier. They were being set up at the same time the DIOCs were, but they were
a little ahead. Okay.
And we had more professional talent at the province level.
Okay.
In the form of the province officers, generally it would be the guy who was dealing with a special branch
mm-hmm.
Who would be working with it. Although in time we got officers specifically assigned, captains and majors, U.S. military,
okay.
usually assigned to those. Now, remember, this is still, this is very late in the war. This, I'm talking about pushing this in May.
Yeah, May.
That's 68.
Yeah, okay. All right, now these DIOCs and PIOCs are going to start coordinating everybody who has any role in the war on the pacification side.
Well, yeah, anybody who's collecting information.
Okay.
Okay? And they also are supposed to be providing this information, and then the S3, see, the mm-hmm. S3 is supposed to work with them to exploit the information.
To conduct operations.
Yes. Mm. You know, the ISEX name was Intelligence, Coordination, and Exploitation.
Yeah, and that must have been...
ICEX, the X was for exploitation.
Yeah.
So that was the other half of it.
Yeah.
Now, that exploitation is against military targets, mm-hmm. but also infrastructure. Now, that's where the Phoenix program started.
Yeah, and let's go back to that, because you had said that you sat down with Evan Parker and consulted with him when he was drawing up ISEX.
Yeah.
Can you go back to that point?
Yeah, the first meeting... Then, in those days, was between Evan Parker and I and Colonel Junichi Buto.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's in maybe July or of 67, June?
Probably the end of June or early July of 67, somewhere around there, yeah.
So you probably knew... Buto from 101 too,
I suppose. Yeah, from 101, and I knew Buto from, I'd seen him in Germany and other places.
And he had been chief of counterintelligence in MACV.
He was the chief of counterintelligence on MACV staff, on General Westmoreland's staff. And he was the guy that was assigned. Just, you know, they had assigned somebody, so they assigned him. So by chance, all three of us had been in Detachment 101 of OSS in World War II.
Okay. And you meet in Saigon at that USA 2 in their little office that... In an office that they had given you, or hadn't you moved into?
Evan Parker set up the place for it. Okay. I don't even remember where it was.
And you had known Parker too.
Yeah, I'd known Parker. Yeah, so okay. We were together at Camp David.
Oh, okay.
In World War II, before Camp David became Camp David.
Oh, okay.
That was an OSS training base.
Oh, I didn't know that.
During the war, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's where the Jedbergs all trained originally. They had the French over there too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think Colby mentions that in the book. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And what was the substance of that meeting? Why had he asked to see you? Why not Bob Wall? Or
he wanted somebody with field operational experience and know-how, and he knew that I had been out there and had been taking different kinds of jobs and worked in the provinces and so forth, and so knew what the whole setup was like.
Or was it also because the Delta was felt to be more of a...
The Delta was considered a major problem. See, in the Delta, we didn't have U.S. forces.
Okay.
Except for two brigades of the 9th Division.
Okay.
And we also didn't have North Vietnamese either. The Delta was an insurgency war.
And that's all
much
for
more so.
And that's all for political reasons that there's not a or is it
because the Delta is so congested with population and so forth. It didn't have the vast open spaces that
right,
two corps
okay.
did.
You couldn't have a division rolling over territory.
Yeah. Because so long as they didn't have North Vietnamese in there, they felt there was no need for Americans down there.
Okay.
Okay?
Right.
Except for the riverine.
Okay, so for that reason, it's felt that it's an insurgency war, and therefore the ISEX to be modeled, a model for the rest of the country, was best to have as a model using
the
Delta.
The Delta wasn't used as a model. The Delta did become a model, but it wasn't used as one.
The
Delta was every single area had the same responsibility for setting this up as fast as possible. We just moved faster in the Delta.
Okay.
Okay. We get it done faster.
And what was the substance of that first meeting between you and Parker and Buto?
We're just talking about the concepts. For example, what we got to do is bring together everybody, military and the police, the RD cadre, the PRU,
mm-hmm.
the census grievance, and anybody, any organization that's involved in collecting intelligence. If there are Australians in the area, Thai forces, South Koreans, mm-hmm. American forces, or Arvin forces. Everybody who is based in that province should be channeling all intelligence into the DIOC
into
or
the
PIOC.
Okay.
Okay? And there, the intelligence would be pulled together, collated, analyzed, interpreted,
mm-hmm.
and new directors would be drafted. You know, okay, we're missing this particular information. And what's this guy's pattern of movement every day, and so forth. And, just new ideas, intelligence directors.
Okay.
Whoever would be in charge is supposed to be doing that all the time. You know, that's part of the cycle.
Yep.
And then you decide who should get these directives. Should the police get it if you're talking about an infrastructure guy?
Yep.
Should the military get it if you're talking about a military unit, province company, or the province battalion, rather, for the VC?
And it's somebody in the DEOC who's making that decision.
Somebody in the DEOC is making that decision.
Is it the special branch guy in the DEOC who's making that decision?
It depends on who becomes the chief of it.
Okay.
The guy is usually the chief is the one who's levying the requirements.
Okay.
And almost anybody can levy requirements. You know, if somebody goes over and he says, gee, this is great information, but we're missing various pieces of this jigsaw puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like putting together a jigsaw puzzle. You're missing parts, so somebody's got to replace those parts.
How does the guy who runs the DEOC stack up against the district advisor, assuming they're not the same person?
Oh, well, he'd be under the district advisor.
He'd
the district advisor is superior to him.
Okay.
Just as a province chief would be superior to the head of the province, the PIOC.
Okay.
And so with the police chief and the top military commander. Well, the military commander is usually the district chief of the province chief.
Right, okay. All right, very good. And that was basically the substance of that first meeting then.
Well,
but that had nothing at all to do with the ISAC staff.
We talked about that first. That's the number one objective, is to get the coordination of intelligence working, because coordination is so poor. We get bits and pieces of it, and sometimes it gets disseminated. For example, in the Delta, there are approximately 10,000 intelligence reports a month coming into at different levels of the Delta.
Okay.
Okay.
Coming back to Kanto.
No, not all to Kanto. Some are just getting in the province and they look at the province and they say, this isn't important enough. We won't send this to Kanto.
But
somebody looks at something,
okay,
said this is. Now, what it would do, it would go up through the police channels, maybe a few hundred through the police channels, a few hundred through the district chief channels, maybe some more through the battalions of the Arvin or American units in the area, okay? Or the Green Beret units.
Okay.
That are out in the air, the LLDB counterparts and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
All of these are all getting their information and sending it, and it
through their own chain of command.
Through their own chains of command, rather than laterally using it and exploiting it locally. Okay, that's what we wanted was at the reaction level to
bring people together,
collate the information and exploit it. Okay, now that was the first objective. The second objective then is assuming, you know, the military intelligence gets exploited by the military units, military, tactical military intelligence. The infrastructure intelligence, okay, gets exploited by whoever appears to be the most appropriate unit to coordinate. If it's the kind of thing that can be handled only by a large military organization, even the biggest of the American office get involved in this, like the 1st Air Cav and the 101st Airborne Division. They were both very good at this, particularly 101st was very good. They would conduct coordinated search operations, for example.
Yeah.
Okay? And they would take PRU units along with them. Or maybe they took police field force units along with them, depending on special branch units, to do the interrogating and so forth.
Yeah. Yep, I've had those described to me, right. But then there's other times where you just want to get one guy in one remote place,
right,
and then at that point you just send the crew out.
Generally, that's the outfit that's best equipped. You're not going to get police officers who are manning a beat in town.
Yeah.
Or,
well, they're not
or a special branch guy who deals with agents.
Yeah. Okay.
To go, you're going to get somebody, an armed intelligence collection unit, that where the guy's got the balls to go into the area and perform the mission.
Yeah.
Now, the PRU were also conducting their own, and the best of the PRU units, for example, would be, they'd have maybe 12 or 15 operations going at any one time. Now, one operation might be a single man is dispatched to sit and watch a canal and determine whether or not enemy supplies are moving down that canal. He keeps track of how many sampans go through the canal every day, anything else that happens in the area that's worth reporting and so forth. Okay, now, he might be given that assignment for as long as a couple of weeks or something like that.
And would he give his information to special branch?
His information would go right back to the PRU.
Okay.
And then be disseminated. Now, if the PRU has a detachment located at that level, generally they operate out of the province, but they might assign a detachment to the district for a week or a month or something like that. And if it went to the province level directly, it would go right out to the district too.
Okay.
That was one of the jobs, getting him right out there. Now, if it was targeted at the district level, given to the PRU, they probably would have reported immediately back to the district level.
Okay.
But everything like this is all sort of done on, while we're trying to establish procedures, we're doing everything on an ad hoc basis.
Yeah, yeah, whatever fit.
Yeah, whatever was most appropriate at the moment.
Incidentally, how many PRU do you think there were in the Delta?
About 1,600.
And how
roughly an average of 100 per province, but some provinces had more and some had less than 100.
Okay, and maybe how many PRU advisors, SEALs and Special Forces altogether?
I think, there were 16.
16.
And there were one for...
Oh, okay, so there'd only be one SEAL or one Special Forces guy in each province?
Right.
That's all. What about SEALs?
There also would be, you know, maybe the RD guy is a major.
Yeah.
You know, Green Beret major or just a straight leg soldier major or something, or captain, and he might go on operations too.
Yeah, because I...
If you sign to the provinces frequently, we encourage the province officers to go on enough of these operations to make sure that, you know, they're connected properly.
Okay.
But the SEAL guy would go on more, the Navy SEAL, than say, or the Special Forces guy. Some of them like, remember guys like Doc Sells down at Baklu province, he used to go in a three-man operation, he'd go himself. He even went out at night where he dressed like in black pajamas, darkened his face with root juices and stuff like that.
But that's
he wasn't very big, wasn't a very big guy. And he would go off with the two other men, and they'd go deep into VC territory. The other two guys probably knew the area very well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd grab some figure and they'd bring him back.
Yeah. Doc Sells or Doc?
Doc, well, they call him Doc, that was just his nickname, but his name was S-E-L-L-S. But I remember he was one guy that could get away with that. Now, some of these guys are so big and powerful.
They couldn't pass a Viet Cong even at night.
You know, if you're 6 foot four, you're not going to pass as a Vietnamese.
Okay.
And a guy like Drew Dix, Green Beret Sergeant, won the Medal of Honor while he was with us, as a PRU advisor in Chow Doc. Drew Dix was, he was about 6 foot tall and probably 195 pounds, over 6 foot tall probably.
Yeah.
And blonde haired, and he's not going to pass as a local.
Okay.
But he used to go on those operations all the time, but he would go on...
Weren't there just
platoon
SEAL units, three or four SEALs, who would go out on their own unilateral operations?
Yeah, but not on Phoenix operations. SEALs did not go on Phoenix operations. Now, they might go on operations targeting an individual if they knew about it.
Because weren't there operations that the Americans wanted to keep apart from the Vietnamese?
Yeah, there were some, but more often SEALs would go on recon missions or things of the sort by themselves. Ones that the riverine groups are interested in are... There are a lot of different kinds of operations, a lot of reasons for going on. They would usually be targeted by their own people.
What about SOG operations?
That's entirely different.
Was there SOG going on in the Delta?
No. SOG didn't operate in the Delta.
Okay, and these guys like SEALs and Special Forces guys who were assigned to PRU were not part of SOG?
If you want to read about SOG, your best book is... Well, this is a good one, aren't it? They got Green Berets at War. SOG.
Did you know Singlaub when he was there?
Yeah.
In Vietnam?
Well, yeah, I've known Singlaub since we were lieutenants.
Okay.
In the Army, World War II.
But you had nothing. Then you had nothing to do with SOG. Not even going into.
I had nothing to do
Cambodia, because didn't SOG send Green Berets into Cambodia and agents into Cambodia and stuff like that? What was that, B-52?
Yeah, but that's something I wasn't involved in.
Okay.
SOG. No.
Okay.
SOG was being targeted more, I guess, by General Westmoreland, and I'm not sure about Washington.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the special branch then. Okay. Special branch being what I understand, the people who were running most of the agent nets against the VCI. I came across a series of articles written in Vietnamese from Tin Sang, which was a Saigon newspaper, Catholic newspaper, which is called The Truth of Phoenix. And I met a woman at the University of Massachusetts, Vietnamese woman. She translated this thing for me.
Yeah.
8 hours worth of tapes one day. And they talked about a special branch advisor in Vinh Long named Major Oscar Jenkins.
And Vin Long, Oscar Jenkins, I didn't know.
Oh, okay. And in the article it said that the
Major Oscar Jenkins, a special branch advisor?
Yeah.
Now, what time was he there, Dave?
68.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Couldn't have been there in 68. Nobody was there named Oscar Jenkins in 68.
Okay. And he was supposed to be the special branch advisor and in charge of Phoenix, that the guy at the province who was, according to this article, the Phoenix officer was the man who was the advisor to the special branch. Is that generally the case, that the guy at the province level would be his counterpart would be the special branch man?
No, the Phoenix advisor was not the advisor to special branch.
Okay, he's just the Phoenix
advisor.
He's
the Phoenix advisor.
And in that respect...
He would work at the DEOC and supervise, at the PEOC and supervise the DEOCs.
Okay.
Okay, that was his job, mostly.
When did those people start coming into the Delta?
Oh, some of them came in, you know, some were available early, even before May.
Okay.
Because Evan Parker got started in the middle of 67.
Yeah.
And then, generally, officers were being filtered into him. And when he could, he would send them out to the Delta and other places. So there was a trickle of officers all along, soon after, middle of 67.
Well, the way I understood from Evan Parker...
Well, we didn't have the South Vietnamese government behind the program. They gave lip service to it and so forth, but they weren't fully behind the program, where things were signed off by the Prime Minister, the President, and all that, until by the middle of 68 we were there.
So, in the beginning, there are some Americans involved in Phoenix who are doing so without GVN approval.
What they were doing, they were trying to get things set up, get organized on the American side, so that they could support the GVN when the GVN got started.
Okay.
But there was no real Phoenix program as such.
Until the GVN got behind it.
Program.
Now, what I understand from what I've been told by Parker is that Phoenix was and I-6 were originally set up on the CIA province officers, were the first people to start running Phoenix. The province officer in charge became the I-6 man in each province until at such time as MACV started sending military officers in to take charge of Phoenix. Is that the way it happened in the Delta?
That was probably the way it happened, yeah, but it would still vary from... You know, depending upon the situation of the province. Every province didn't have an officer.
Didn't have a Phoenix officer.
Didn't have a Phoenix officer.
And where there wasn't a Phoenix officer, then the province officer in charge would have that, handle that responsibility.
Most likely would be the guy who was, the province officer in charge would be responsible for it overall, but he probably would ask the guy who's in liaison with special branch to handle it.
Okay, and that guy who's in charge, in liaison with special branch, is always CIA, right?
Not necessarily. He might be loaned by the military to the CIA for the time being, not necessarily a professional officer, but he's generally a highly experienced intelligence officer.
Because this is what I want to talk about,
the intelligence was the most important part about it first, getting that thing started.
Right, and that's what
then
I want.
Then the exploitation.
And I want to know what kind of a role you played in, you know, making sure that you had in the province the right either Phoenix advisor to the special branch or whoever it was, getting that information. How did you go about setting that up?
One of the first persons they assigned to me was a guy named Lieutenant Colonel Doug Dillard.
Okay.
D-I-L-L-A-R-D.
Okay.
Fine officer. Outstanding officer.
Yeah.
Just as Major General Sillis was a fine officer at the same time.
Okay.
There were two lieutenant colonels, both of them were on my staff.
Okay.
One was for Phoenix, one was paramilitary.
Okay.
Seventh was paramilitary. Now, Dillard had been, he's a parachute officer. He had joined the Army when he was only about 17. He had gone in all the jumps of the 82nd Airborne Division made in World War II.
Hmm.
I think five jumps.
Had he gone into Special Forces?
No, as of that time. Then, after the war, he... studied and he got his college degree and he became an officer.
Yeah, okay.
And like General Vesey, sort of.
Okay.
You know, who just retired as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Vesey was there. And Doug then, he got a master's degree too, and he moved up the ladder, and then he got into intelligence.
Okay.
And he became a specialist. He had experience in the intelligence field, and he had a job as a commander. He had experience
commander as operations officer. Of an intelligence group.
He was commander of the intelligence group with the 18th Airborne Corps. He had been had operational experience in Europe with, you know, I don't know whether this was the 513th or some one of those intelligence outfits up there.
Mm-hmm.
He had counterintelligence as well as regular intelligence experience. And he had, as an operations officer, and he had also had worked as a staff officer. So he had, you know, command, staff, and operations experience. And was a first-class guy, and a lot of combat experience. He was a qualified master paratrooper,
mm-hmm.
as well as a guy with a couple of blips from the Korean War. He had three combat infantryman's badges.
So is he someone you asked for, or was he somebody that MACV assigned to?
He was somebody who's assigned to me because they wanted the best guy that could get down to the Delta.
Okay.
To work with me.
Is he still alive?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's up around Baltimore somewhere. Doug Dill would be very good if we could ever talk with him.
Okay.
Get to him. Unfortunately, the guy didn't make Brigadier General. He was supposed to make Brigadier General. He was at the top of his list. And the story I heard was that Nixon wanted somebody, a special pet of his, to get the job, and somebody he knew.
Okay.
And Dill
so he retired as a colonel.
He retires as a colonel, yeah.
Okay. And he came in maybe when? What time? Is that 67?
Oh, probably, I'm not quite sure, but I know he was there immediately after Tet, if not before that.
Okay.
Tet of 68. I forget exactly when he came
in. And he's your first Phoenix Region officer?
Yeah, he's the first. Yeah, I think I had a major assigned for a while first, but then okay. Dillard took over from the major, and the major was assigned to a province.
Okay.
I think there was a major there temporarily.
Okay.
But he was, you know, a real first-class military intelligence officer.
And it's his job to, is he the one who's actually in charge of setting up the PIOX and the DIOX?
He worked full-time on Phoenix.
Okay.
Whereas John Sutter worked full-time on the paramilitary side.
Okay.
Then we had another guy working full-time on intelligence.
Who was that?
That's different.
Okay, that's not military intelligence.
Well, it could be, but he was a regular staffer.
Okay.
The agency.
Okay.
These others were all military people assigned.
And that would just be unilateral intelligence? Or is that CIO and all that
stuff? Intelligence, but that's, you know, handling the real sensitive operations, the important ones and so forth, making sure that they're properly supervised.
And that's making getting agents into the enemy apparatus. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And it's Dillard then who has the responsibility of setting up all the PIOX and the DIOX and staffing them and making sure that they're running properly.
Right.
So he would be a good person for me to...
He'd be a good guy to talk with, yeah.
You got a current address for him, perhaps?
Gee. I think you'd have to check him out through Fort Holabird.
Okay.
He was there as an instructor, last I heard.
Okay. So he might not be retired?
He's retired in the Baltimore area somewhere.
Okay.
That's the last I heard.
Very good. Okay. Did you, can you talk to special branches? Is there anything else that I should know about?
Branch, they have the provincial
interrogation
centers.
The PICs. That's,
the
PICs. Okay. Now, I talked with a guy who was involved with, he was actually head of field operations from 65 to 67. I believe you met him, Nelson Brickham.
Yeah.
He said I talked with him, and he set up the PICs.
He had come in
and taken over from Tucker Googleman, who's a bit of a legend.
Oh yeah,
it was too bad that he passed. You know, had that.
Yeah.
But what's the relationship between Special Branch and PICs and the overall role and value of the PICs? In the Delta, I mean, are they important?
Well,
as I understand, they're essential.
Value of the PICs dependent upon One, the number of people that were put into it. Another, the level of the prisoners that were brought there.
Okay.
Second, upon the caliber of the people who manned the picks and the chief of special branch.
Okay.
If you had a good man, it'd be good. A lot of these guys had to be retrained, the special branch people, because they had the old French methods, you know, interrogation, which could include torture even.
Yeah.
All of the stuff had to be stopped by the agency.
Okay.
And they had to be retaught with much more sophisticated techniques, with no torture or abuse of people.
Was that policy or was that practice?
That was policy.
Yeah, okay.
And to the extent, you know, you can't have an American there all the time watching these things and so forth, but to the extent that I know of, I don't know of anybody that was tortured down in the Delta by the police, and certainly not in the PIC to the best of my knowledge.
Okay.
Of the guys, though, to get the information, and then how good were they at writing up this information? Sometimes some of these guys said they couldn't write well, you know, couldn't put things together.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys weren't thorough enough in following through and so forth. So this is the kind of thing that the Americans supervised.
All right, now who's bringing... All right, so is there an American at each province interrogation center? Is that the special branch advisor's
job?
Well,
that would be an American who would spend part of his time each day at the PIC.
Okay. And is that the special branch advisor or not?
Yeah, it would be the special branch advisor. No, it would be the special branch advisor. He would overlook the PIC and the different operations that special branch is conducting.
Okay.
And
who is bringing prisoners to the, or suspects, to the PIC? Now, are Prue bringing their snatches back to Prue headquarters, or are they bringing them over to the PIC?
It would depend. Now, it depends on who's brought in. If, for example, the U.S. 9th Division, Arvin 21st Division, is on an operation, okay, and they get some people who are members of the infrastructure as well as people who are members of the military apparatus, okay, they are more interested in the military apparatus. They don't know what to do with these political people.
Okay.
So they would turn them over to the police special branch.
The VCI.
VCI.
Okay.
Okay.
And they would then put them in the PIC for...
And they would put them in the PIC.
Okay.
Now, this frequently happened. Arvin was bringing them in. RF and PF would be bringing them in and so forth. Sometimes police operations would be bringing them in. Sometimes they'd be caught by, you know, at roadblocks. They'd be caught at police checkpoints. They'd be caught in the course of normal police activities.
Right.
Sometimes guys would try to sneak into the town and they'd be caught and served.
Are there any other facilities for suspects in DIOX and PIOX as well as in PICS? Now, if a Phoenix operation goes out and they snatch somebody, and they did they bring him back to the DIOC or the PIOC?
If it was, say...
It's strictly a Phoenix operation. Does he go to the PIOC or does he go to the PIC? This is one thing I can never figure out.
Now, you see, they also had, in addition to that, they had the province chiefs usually would have their own
province
setup, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes people would be turned over to them for prosecution. They figure they were not high enough for, not worthwhile interrogating.
Okay.
Putting into the PIC. Not high enough level. But still, they were members of the Viet Cong infrastructure.
Okay.
And so they'd be turned over to the province chief.
Who had his own jail or facility.
Who had his own facilities, yeah.
Okay.
And he would probably be prepared to process them judicially in front of the province committee. They had
the Phoenix Province Committee.
Well, it wasn't a Phoenix committee. It actually was an existing committee. It was there long before Phoenix.
Oh, okay. But now, Phoenix does have, there's also the Feng Wong committees, too.
Feng Wong committee, yeah. But that would be composed of, you know, the province chief would be the head of it, then there'd be the police chief, the special branch chief, and the
military
and the MSA guy, military security, and they probably somebody from the RD cadre program.
Yeah.
And, you know, there'd be different people on that committee.
Okay.
Okay. But that committee was not a standing committee.
Okay.
That was just brought together for policy purposes.
Okay.
And So that committee didn't receive prisoners or anything like that. Now, but the Promise Chief did have his own judicial committee for processing these people and deciding whether they should be, you know, whether they could be found guilty. And one of the problems that you would have there is the fact that intelligence and evidence are not the same thing.
Okay.
Okay. He may have an intelligence report indicating that a certain person may be, say, the head of the District Security Committee.
Okay.
The PRG. The NLF.
Okay.
Okay. But that's an intelligence source, and that intelligence source may be in the enemy apparatus. So you're not going to pull him out of the enemy apparatus and identify him and expose him to the world.
Well, this is one of the things.
Using him to stand up and testify.
Because if you're putting secret agents into the enemy infrastructure, how do you know that when you're snatching the district, he isn't one of your agents? You don't know until you get back to the. You don't know when until you get back.
Yeah.
Okay, and is this where accidents sometimes happen too? Where
some of these guys gone right straight through the prison system and gone back on out again and so forth. But
okay.
You lose track of them and all of a sudden they show up again. We had guys that would present evidence and I would say there's going to be a meeting of the district, top level district cells at such and such a time and such a place. And we've had instances in which Arvin, which was supposed to go in there, instead we'd call for an airstrike.
Yeah.
And then the agent who's in there gets injured, gets wounded. You know, because Arnie says, fuck you guys, no future, look at
that. Yeah, so that that is a problem.
Yeah, that kind of thing is a problem, whenever you turn information over to somebody else, you know, from a sensitive source.
Okay. All right, so this division of prisoners, all right, the province chief is going to handle low echelon suspects who aren't part of the VCI.
Well, he might have a person in there, you know, and the person has gotten by and sort of identified himself. I'm a common liaison cadre, say.
Okay.
And so people say, well, that's not very important. He handles a safe house or something of the sort.
Okay.
And then they discover that he's very important. He's much higher up on the.
That's just his cover.
His cover.
Right.
And so they may say, okay, into the pick with him.
Yeah. Okay, so then important suspects go to the PIC.
Yeah.
Okay. Who goes to the PIOC and the DIOC? Or
They don't have facilities there.
Okay, but they do share information with the PIC. So anything that happens at the PIC,
the special branch chief is supposed to turn it over.
He gives it to a guy, and the guy runs it over to the other building, and then that goes into the files.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. What about the Phoenix committees that sentence? When I was talking with Tilton, Tilton said that he said Phoenix is not PRU, Phoenix is not Special Branch, Phoenix is not RevDev.
Right.
Phoenix is a committee system which tries suspects. At the province level, there's a Phoenix committee that gets Phoenix suspects and then tries them under those, you know, or detains them.
It's not
them.
A Phoenix committee. No, it's a Province Security Committee.
Yeah, Province Security Committee.
Okay.
But that, he said, is the essence of the Phoenix. That, according to him, is the essence of Phoenix, is this Province Security Committee.
Well,
does that jive with what you...
Well, let's put it this way. First, you know, whenever you have... suppose you're in a DIOC, okay? Mm-hmm. You got a target in mind.
Okay.
All right? Let's say he's the district PRG chief. Okay.
And you found this out through a special branch agent who heard it through the grapevine.
Yeah, and you might have in his dossier.
Yeah.
You start off with a card, 3x5 card.
Yep.
Okay. If you begin getting quite a bit of information, then you open a folder.
Okay.
Particularly if the guy's important. If he's not important, you don't bother.
Okay.
Okay. Then in that folder, you might find you get some information from the PRU. You get some information from the guy from documents, or you know, it might be a fair amount of.
Yeah.
Okay, you keep building up on this.
Finally, you got enough that you can go out and get them.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you go out and you target the guy. Okay? You bring him in, and maybe he cooperates, or maybe he doesn't. Anyway, you might put him in the pick.
Okay?
He's been in the pick for a couple of months, and they've gotten whatever they think they're going to get out of him and so forth. They turn him over to the Province Security Committee.
Yep. Okay. With all their evidence.
Yeah, with whatever they've got on them. And then the province chief, he's held in the province jail, and the province chief meets maybe with this committee twice a week. And so this guy is brought up in front of the province chief.
Okay.
In the meanwhile, the province chief knows that the jail is filled to capacity. They're building more jails, and they can't get enough prison space to keep all the people. It's a real problem. And he figures if he puts this guy in, he's going to let somebody else out.
Yeah.
Now, there have been instances, you know, I never got any specific evidence on, but where province chiefs sometimes let people out. They say, oh, Christ, he's my wife's brother-in-law,
okay.
Something like that, you know? And so the guy gets off.
Right. Well, you also hear that anybody who, you know, in some provinces, anybody could get out no matter who they were as long as they pay a certain amount of money.
Right.
You know, I mean...
That's another factor, yeah.
Yeah,
And so the guy, you know, if the guy knows he's going to be pulled up in front of a certain date, he may be able to contact some relative. The relative goes and pays somebody. I don't know who it could be. It could be somebody in the military security agency, or it could be somebody in the province chief staff, or whoever they can get in touch with. And somebody gets paid off, and so the guy gets out.
So this, as in any system,
this is a major problem.
Okay.
Major problem in that we couldn't process all the prisoners. Now, to get back again, in the very beginning, as you'll see in this paper that I wrote here, the first step, whenever you have this target, this guy, this district chief, is you decide to target him, okay? Now, you don't just send people out to get him right away.
Mm-hmm.
First thing you do, you look over that entire dossier, and you say, is there any reason to believe that we could recruit this guy in position?
That's, okay.
All right, that's the first step.
Well, that's one of the things Brigham said to me, is that the first object of an intelligence agent is not to capture... Not to interrogate or incarcerate. He said, that's police.
Yeah.
He said, what intelligence wants to do is recruit.
Right.
Okay.
Now, this is what special branch is there to do, too.
Okay.
Okay. Can this guy be recruited to operate in place?
Okay.
Okay. If you can, now, first you have to figure, can you get access to him? Does he have a sister or a wife or somebody in town that we can have access to? Or a brother? Or any relative?
As a cutout or whatever.
Yeah, somebody who can reach him.
Yep.
Okay, is there any reason to believe that he's been in this position for 5 years and he hasn't gotten promoted and everybody else around him has moved on up the ladder?
Mm-hmm.
Does he bear resentment against
this?
Anything you can find in the way of vulnerability data that would indicate that this guy might possibly be amenable to persuasion to
bribes to, I suppose.
Workers.
If you
a bribe to,
is a bribe a standard thing, will give you so much money to be an agent?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
There have been guys who have been recruited almost directly into the PRU.
Yeah.
You know, people who said, look, all I know is how to fight.
Yeah.
And you get the best outfit around.
Polgard said to me that a lot of guys wanted to leave their wives.
Well, that's a problem. Yeah. The guys in the BC side, some of that did happen, too.
Yeah. So there was a lot of reasons for
doing
it. Okay.
Personal reasons. It's, yeah.
But even that, you wouldn't want to have a guy, you'd rather have him not in the PRU, you'd rather have him back in the district. Apparatus,
yeah.
Not in the,
so,
you'd rather have somebody in there knowing
course,
what was going on.
Of course. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what you're usually aiming at. Okay. First thing, can you do that? If you cannot, then can you capture him?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so that's the second step. First, induce him to remain in place. Second, induce him to defect if you can do that. If you can get him to Chu Hoi.
Okay.
So now a lot of these were just aimed at persuading the guy to Chu Hoi.
And did you know Jean Babel, who was the head of the Chu Hoi program?
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah. Jeez, I haven't heard that name in a long, long time. Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay. He's a person I'm trying to track down, but I can't find.
Yeah.
I just thought maybe you might know where he's at.
Yeah. He used to be very enthusiastic about what Jean did.
He was a flying tiger.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, he used to fly with Ralph Johnson in China, the two of them.
I'm getting some interesting background information, but I have, of course, Johnson's gone, and I don't know where Battle is, or Battle, but anyway.
Yeah, Gene, she hadn't thought of her in years.
Okay.
So that's the second thing, is induce him to defect if you can. The third, capture.
Okay.
The amount of capture operation.
And interrogate.
And then, you interrogate.
Okay.
The kind of interrogation that you conduct also depends upon the kind of information you have on the guy. If you know this guy's a real hard-nosed character, real tough, dyed-in-the-wool communist, well, you know, if you tortured them, you wouldn't get anything out of them.
Yeah, because they'll just die.
Yeah, what you've got to do is, you know, you got to figure out how you're going to persuade them to talk.
So you really got to know a lot about a person.
The more you know about them, the better off you are. Okay. So that's one of the big advantages of having these.
And this is, and like for instance, with the recruitment, that's something that a special branch agent would do.
Right. If you get somebody, but you might have somebody else to do the job. You know, you might do it through his mother.
Yeah. Okay. I understand. I understand. Okay.
It depends on what access you have to the guy. You've got to have that.
Okay.
Somebody he can trust. Okay, then. So you try to capture the guy, and if you mount a capture operation, good. Now, the next step is, and this has worked very effectively, and we didn't realize it till after the war how effectively it did work, but guys like Stanley Kano and others who were out there talking with some of these people found out that one of the things that we did was to conduct psychological operations against some of these guys, and the most effective one of all was to put posters up indicating so-and-so, you know, it was the guy who called...